stayed on schedule. You got a bonus episode. I feel good about myself. Happy Passover. Happy Easter. Whether you listen to this on the day after, I wish you the happiest of seasons, because my name is Nkwa Sonia and I'm back in my bag again. Joining me today, this one hits a little bit close to home. I never intended to give any of you this much information about my real and personal life, but here we are. I'm at my, I hesitate between calling it a home and a workplace. I'll do neither and instead just say that the wonderful Amy Teachin joins me this very episode. Thanks, Amy. How are you?
Oh my gosh. Total pleasure. Total pleasure to be with you.
You are taking this far, far too well. What, I can't believe you are so nervous about this thing getting underway in the first place.
Me either. What was that? Like, I'm at total ease right now.
I mean, and we were talking about the many places I've had to record these episodes, equipment in tow, and we are in your office right now. Now, the interesting thing about Amy is that she is what we in the business, and by business, I mean life, call a life coach. People hear it a lot, and they don't quite understand what that means. Explain in your own words.
Well, automatically, how I feel is that there are people listening right now who have decided to write me off as sort of like, this is witchcraft or or BS or what exactly is it? And I'm with you. Like, what is it? What I will say, if I can give my resume background, is that I have worked at a rape crisis center in crisis counseling. I was pursuing licensure as a therapist in Georgia. A life coach is a person who can handle your baggage, but isn't just going to sit with you for an extended period of time in that pain. They're going to ask you the question, okay, that's, you know, they're going to say that's hard. And then they're going to say, what are you going to do now? So that is what a life coach does. And they're going to be with you as you plot forward into this incredibly uncharted and exciting and maybe terrifying territory.
For some reason, when you look at your position and what you do, people tend to look at it as sort of unnecessary. What? Why do you think that is?
My gosh, because what is a life coach? I'm so sorry. I've got tech that's like blowing up right now.
See, she's demand, I'm telling you.
I think because most people have been forced, like, when's the first time you had a coach? It's when you're a kid and you've got to do sports and someone forced you to do that too. Like, people force you into life. And I think that people have no idea how to all of a sudden pause and harness their own power and their own energy and say, oh my goodness, I was given this breath in my lungs. Like, and this season on this planet, what do I want to be doing? Why am I even here? And that's just not something that people ask themselves. And so to have some sage, which is not exactly what I am, but to have somebody who's lived a couple, you know,
revolutions.
We have. Thank you. You just you saw my hand. He, just in case you were curious, Nkwa can read nonverbal cues like a big dog.
Something.
Big dog. I mean, to me, it's just the same as going to the wise sage in any tribal culture where you just go, you know, people are, I feel like there's a taboo about therapists and I feel like there's a taboo about asking someone, being unsure about what you want to do. Everyone kind of like needs to know. And when you don't know, it's like seen as a weakness. And to me, I think of it as an opportunity to be like, all right, fresh start. What is your soul after? What were you built for? Let's start at the bottom. So,
see, now I want to now pivot this sort of spiritually, because I'm giving more away. But I work at a Christian school. I'm glad to work at a Christian school. People have different views about different things and things of that nature. And one of the things that has been a topic in many faith circles is whether or not therapy is even necessary. I actually started going to see a therapist back in April, and it's actually helped me out a lot. It was never one of those, oh my goodness, I can't get out of bed anymore, although that happened for a time.
Sure. But yeah,
I feel like when it comes to mental health and the church, I don't think we talk about that. Mm-hmm.
First of all, incredible, like, props to you for even saying that, because there is this insane uncomfortability. Like, oh, you can't. It's a taboo to be like, oh, I need therapy. And again, when is it weakness to seek wisdom from somebody else about something that we don't know how to handle, right? Like, it's absurd. It's absurd. I think the church is allowing the world to infiltrate us. Like, weakness mm-hmm. is weakness. Actually, the Bible says when you're weak, you're strong. So, like, I feel like that is, I'm so grateful that you actually put that out there, because to me, that invites other people to say, all right, cool. Yeah, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I need to do something. So there's that. But yeah, April.
Yeah.
Is that this month or is that a year ago?
That's, oh, wow. That's a year ago.
Good. That explains why you're so well balanced, Inqua.
Oh, because I wasn't. Oh, listen, there was a time. But I think the best part about that is now I'm more intentional about my intensity.
Nice.
Which is actually really very nice. It's the only way I could sustain this for so long and have a very loyal thank you audience. Let's let's shift gears a little bit, because you were scared of this not having, you know, the requisite amount of sports talk. Correction, I was always glad to go there, but you were like, do I need stats?
It's true. Because I'm like the illegitimate child. Like, I enjoy the Red Sox because I'm from Massachusetts, but my husband can tell you their lineup better than I can. I can tell you that the Phillies just took on an overpriced, you know, person. I can talk about, like, but I can't tell you who their number or whatever. I mean, it's incredibly vague, which is what therapy is all about, right? Like, you don't want to be pointed. You want to be a little bit more flexible with these things.
And open-ended.
Exactly.
It's also one of the few reasons why a Yankee fan and a Red Sox fan would ever agree to do this sort of thing.
And we're in
together.
The same room. Amen.
I mean, listen.
It's next level.
So, going to a sport perspective.
Yes.
I feel like... and this is... It's important because when people talk about pressure... And performing under pressure when there is indeed a time limit, mm-hmm. like with my background across a bunch of sports, it even happens as on the broadcasting side, coaching side, all that sort of stuff as well. How do you, as a life coach, see pressure, and how do you see people deal with it well?
That's a great question. It actually is a really practical question for anybody listening, because anyone listening has pressure. It could be relational, you know, it could be professional, it could be educational, it could be spiritual. Honestly, like mm-hmm. I feel like every human, if you give yourself a minute to check in, there's pressure in your life. And I think so much of it is we've constructed that beast in our own head. Like, it's not even something that's actually happening. That we are the foremost, like, architect of the pressure in our lives. So for example, I coach kids who are athletes. Mm-hmm. And athletic coaching is huge. And athletic counseling is huge. Because so much, I mean, baseball, look at pitchers. Look at these people who, I mean, you can see their minds getting in the way of the game. And there's power in that. The story we tell ourselves that we believe, whether it's true or false, is the story we tell ourselves that we believe. And so I think it's really, really awesome when you can get kind of behind the curtain with someone and say, that's not really what's happening. Here's what I see. And I'm an outside set of eyes. I'm not, you know, I'm not God, but I certainly am seeing a whole bunch of things that you're not paying attention to because mm-hmm. you believe this narrative. And so I've seen people that I've coached athletically improve in incredible ways, just simply by being able to tell them the truth and have them ignore the lie that they've been believing for so long. So, like, increasing time as a swimmer decreasing time or whatever. Did I answer that question? I'm not really sure.
I think you did, but to take it to a personal level, there's no one way to deal with pressure, but what have you seen people use, or even what's worked for you?
Silence, stillness. It's not popular in this year, in this era, to shut everything down and be alone. That sounds like depression in this culture. But you cannot get clarity if you don't kind of remove all of the outside voices and static. And I think that's, I'm sorry to keep going back to the Bible, but be still and know. Like, I think that humans have never been on such a hamster wheel as we are right now. And so just to be able to check in with yourself, you know, I think a lot of the pressure we have is just a mirage. None of it's actually real or worth anything. And so to say, okay, is this going to matter? Every life coach will ask you, is this going to matter in 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years? And just give yourself some perspective. Like, why am I freaking out about this thing? One of the things that I'm a yoga instructor and a Pilates instructor as well, and breath. Just taking yourself into the minute, inhaling for 3, exhaling for 6 seconds, just paying attention to your breath and being like, this is my present moment. Nothing is guaranteed, and letting go of everything else. I think that brings some clarity and some perspective that allows that pressure to kind of diminish.
And the beautiful thing about that is I see that with the potential to take place, whether you're in the office or even on the field, I start thinking of free throws because you'll see some of the most gifted players in the world.
Oh yeah, totally.
Take that 15 feet from the charity stripe to the basket and just be awful.
I mean, I will say my bracket was based on, and again, yes, I did do a bracket as someone who knows nothing.
Oh, let's definitely talk about brackets.
Oh, no, I mean, there's nothing. I was totally annihilated very early on. Actually, I was pretty high up until Gonzaga got wrecked because I had them going all the way. Yes, I did.
Oh, no.
Yes,
well,
I
at least
did.
You didn't have Duke going all the way like I
right.
did.
Right, well,
and
like everyone.
And I just like Zion Williamson. I didn't even like Duke.
It's fine. You're forgiven.
So tell me, because I see from here, shout out to Baylor University.
Oh.
Shout out to Kim Mulkey winning another chip.
Oh my gosh, hilarious, yes.
I'm telling you, those Baylor teams like broke up the UConn dynasties and it made me like them all the more.
Super important. What's interesting is I'm from New England, and when I got to Baylor, this is how everything in life is recycled. I did cheerleading based on a dare in high school for a semester. I played lacrosse. I was not that kid, and my friends made me do it. And I was like, fine, but I'm not doing those booty shake halftime dances, and they didn't make me. And that, like, fast forward a decade later, paid for, like, not only did I get like free tuition for my graduate program at Baylor, but I got like paid to work as the assistant to the spirit coordinator at Baylor University. I was giving pizza to the ESPN guys. Like, I had like field passes for every Big 12, everything. Like, it was incredible. And that is where I saw a ton of, okay, your head is absolutely determining what's going on. And Baylor was horrible in the years that we were there in terms of men's basketball. Just had a horrible thing happen between two players. I don't know if you know about that.
Right.
The decapitation disaster. Mm-hmm. Horrible. But that was the best season for women's basketball. And we went to the national championship like right after we left there. And so Kim Mulkey, if you want to talk about, like, that woman doesn't need a life coach because she knew that she was her biggest barrier, I think. And so, yeah, that being at Baylor, it showed me a lot about different sports. I mean, our football team was a disaster. Our basketball team was a disaster.
Let's see. So this is definitely before Robert Griffin, way before Robert
Griffin.
Oh
my gosh. RG3 changed everything and then he didn't. So it was sad.
Oh, Art Brown.
My husband definitely has a jersey of his from when he was in Washington. It was sad.
Ugh.
It's over.
I don't even want to.
No,
talk
we
about
can't
football.
Do that.
Football,
it's fine.
Football is
Robert, we still love you. You know what? Grace.
Grace. Looking at.
How do you segue? I mean,
I'm trying to figure it out right now. I mean, looking at, in general, the way people view athletes, mm-hmm. right? They are very much viewed as these monolithic robots.
Sure.
You play your sport. Do only your sport. Mm-hmm. I feel as this, and I think it's even worse for the younger kids because they feel like if they're not all basketball, they'll never go to college. Mm-hmm. And for those who have dreams of something higher, they'll never get there either. Mm-hmm. We talked about balance pretty early. What does balance look like for someone who was a very high achiever in one thing but has other interests?
Well, what did Michael Jordan play in high school?
baseball.
There you have it. Balance is knowing that I've got other things to contribute, you know? And I might not know what I'm amazing at quite yet. Now, of course, that's like a terrible example. I mean, he's a god. But I think it's not limiting yourself and not telling yourself, ah, I can't do that. I'm not really good at that. Or, you know, there's so much self-limiting. And I think as a life coach, I'm not trying to tell people they're good at something they're not at all. I'm trying to tell people, give it a shot, right? Because so many times I think it's the failure to try that is what holds people back. So balance. I think that there's a lot of parental outside pressure too. I think if someone has a passion about something, they need to go after that thing. I can't say what Michael Jordan's passion was greater, or, you know, was it baseball, was it basketball? But I mean, he came alive doing something that he had almost, I mean, someone might have said he had no business doing it, you know? So I think that there's a lot of people who don't know how awesome they are at a particular thing. And if they have a passion and a call and a pull towards something, I would say you are doing yourself and the world a disservice if you are not going after that, at least for a minute. Give it a shot, you know?
We see so many people do exactly what you just said. They'll look and go, I don't, it's either an I don't know or it's my personal favorite. I wasn't called to do this.
That's, yeah, classic.
Like, oh, you called yourself? That's cute, mm-hmm. I guess. So as a life coach, when you are in, maybe I won't call it a session, I'll call it an appointment instead. How do those interactions usually go? Obviously without breaking whatever NDA.
Yeah, you're fine.
Like, just for those who are thinking about it slightly, what does that look like?
I love that you're asking that particular question. And you totally stepped out on a limb and were like, been to therapy. Right at the beginning, I think coaching is for someone who doesn't have sort of a crisis on their hands. That's, you know, okay, I was traumatized in this way as a child, or this, that, or I've got this pattern. Coaching and therapy are absolutely similar in terms of having someone next to you that's saying, all right, I see this thing and I'm with you and I'm totally for you. Let's move forward. But my time with a client is completely run by them, where I say, all right, you've got an itch. Tell me about it. And then I ask them, why the heck aren't you scratching it? And what would it take for you to do it? And it's very practical. It's like, all right, what's step one? What's step two? And then all that I do is hold them accountable to it. Like, okay, next week. So did you do that thing we agreed to last week? It's a ridiculous thing, but we will hold ourselves back. And I really don't know why. I don't know why humans are so afraid to just live abundantly. But I think we are. And so what I get to do is I get to double dog dare people to just kind of like live.
I like that. You double dog dare people to live. So where do you think the fear of failure comes into play?
Step one, depending on the client. Yeah. I mean, you went to Stony Brook, Inqua.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I did. Oh, yeah, that's where I'm at, by the way.
Right now. Hey. Yeah, you tell me.
Ooh, the fear to fail. Let me see.
This is a classic life coach move right here.
I'm making him
answer the question.
I'm so mad she did that. But the truth is, the fear to fail was at the forefront of my mind.
Right.
Particularly because I've recognized by nature I'm a bit of a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. Like I can't be in a space where people are okay with okay.
Mm.
Like it will literally make me itch. It will make me bored, and I'll go, all right, I can roll out of bed and do this. What's next?
Yeah.
So
you need a higher degree of stimulation than that.
Honestly, I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
I want a challenge. I want to be able to do multiple things. But then I also find that once I achieve it, kind of get bored. That's why I can't, something like trying to watch the same movie twice, I can't do it.
Is there an exception to that?
No, I can't watch the same movie twice. I can,
no way.
Not in the theater. Like, I tried it once with
Black Panther. I won't do it in the theater.
Yeah. But I'll watch things again and again and again just to look for different things. But
In the background, yeah.
Right. But the same as that first time. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe. Like, no.
You do that once.
Do it once.
You do life once. Why would you? Yeah. Yeah. All right. So you just told me that you're a perfectionist and you just asked me the question, like, how do people get around this? Mm-hmm. Lifelong challenge. You have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. It's incredibly, you have to just kind of be like, all right, I'm going to do this. It's like those people who dive into ice cold water knowing it's going to stink, but you just have to do it. Like, and you have to do that in ways that you just weren't expecting. And then see what happens and do it again. Wake up the next day, see what happens, do it again. I mean, I don't know. It's not for the faint of heart. It's for people who are done with what they're doing right now. And that's not everybody. There are some people who are really comfortable with what's comfortable. But for everyone else who's feeling uneasy or itchy or like an unrest, that's where having somebody honest to stand next to you and say, all right, tell me what does it for you. Well, what are you doing to get that thing? You know, I mean, it's unfathomable to me that we can just be mediocre. And that's what you just said to me, basically. So I get it. I get that people are comfortable. But as soon as someone's ready to blossom, I'm super stoked to be there with them.
So for next steps, I can't believe we have advanced to next steps, talking professionally and whatnot. When you think about if someone's going from one session to the next, I know you said you just sort of sit back and wait. Well, what ideally would you expect from the client?
It depends on the client and why they're coming to me. I mean, sometimes people will come to me because I have people with legitimate psychological disorders. Mm-hmm. And they come to me because therapists have made them feel uncomfortable. And I say outright, like, this is not in place of therapy. But I can still set goals for them, you know? So it really does depend on the person I'm dealing with. But as far as next steps, the client determines it. Like, what would feel like a triumph for you? All right, well, let's break that down. And so I just get to watch them conquer all kinds of crap. And it's again, like, what would be really easy for you would be really hard for someone else and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So just being able to watch someone bulldoze through their barriers one after another is the next step. The next step is being able to high five them, because ultimately no session is a waste. Every time I meet with someone, I'm setting them up for a challenge that they're ready for. And so the next week, it's like, okay, wow, you did it. And why did you think you couldn't do that? Because you totally could do that. But I'm so glad to be the one to push you past that, you know? So it's just a fascinating sort of study in human behavior.
And speaking of human behavior, I feel like in general, positivity is at the forefront of what do. Yeah.
Yes.
When you look at leadership styles, whether it be on a field or in the workplace, why do you think that positivity isn't valued as much as it could be?
Maybe because it's not viewed as realistic. I mean, I think people think negativity is safe. If I have a worst case scenario, like, plan, then cool, you know, I'm ready for the worst thing to happen. But I think positivity is very, like, vanilla. It's very sort of, you know, cheesy.
Like, yeah.
Like, and it's self-help, and it sounds really hollow. It sounds like a husk. It doesn't sound like there's anything behind positivity. I think that's sad, because the truth is we can construct our reality to a point. If you focus all your energy on the negative, what will you become? What will all of your thoughts sort of rotate around? It's going to be negativity. And so I think if somebody, I mean, I'm not trying to say everyone should wake up and look at themselves and say, I am Batman, or I am Superman. I don't want you to be, you know, delusional, but I do think that you need to be able to say, these are my strengths. I'm actually good at this, and praise yourself, because the tongue lashing that people give themselves mentally every day is unbelievable. If most of the people I talk to, if they were to talk to a child like that, they would go to jail for how abusive they are to themselves. And so, like, to be able to turn around and be gentle, nothing can thrive under that sort of treatment. Nothing. Like, put a plant in a dark room and don't fertilize it and watch what happens. And our brains and our lives and our souls are the same way. So positivity is just sunlight. It's just air. It's just the way that things should be. But I think we live in a fallen planet, and it's just not that way.
But do you think there is such a thing as toxic positivity?
Because you mean lies?
I mean, I guess, because I've been seeing this. I guess this is part of being on social media a lot. But
yeah.
I've definitely seen those posts where it says toxic positivity. Oh, everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Nothing is wrong.
Absolutely.
Versus, you know, like addressing the thing at hand while still looking to be optimistic, I guess.
That's a solid, yeah, that's a really good observation, for sure. Because it's, again, delusional. Like, all is well. I've got cancer, but all is well. Like, no. I've got cancer, and I'm doing everything within my power to fight against it. And at the end of the day, I didn't ask to be here. So I'm just going to be grateful. You know, I mean, I think gratitude is a totally cool and very applicable, like, type of positivity that anybody can, I think anybody can practice that. But I agree with you. If you go on Instagram and it's like, girl, you got this. It's like, you don't even know who you're talking to or what you're saying. Like, that is definitely negative and false. I never thought about that. That there's just this, like, negative, what did you call it?
Toxic positivity. That's right.
Because it's a lie. Yes. And I will never do that to a client. One of the things I cannot do is actually lie to people. I'll pump them up, but I will prep them. Like, if you don't do this work, it's not going to happen. I'm right here, but this is on you. And I think that that's, I mean, some people are not ready to hear that. They're like, no, you were supposed to do this. Why am I paying all this money? You're paying me this money so I can show you what's real.
How to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These are the choices you're making to self-sabotage. And I'm going to tell you what they are. But if you're going to keep making them, I can't do anything about that. Like, I think that people, and again, this is, I'm sorry, I keep bringing it back around to, like, divinity.
Go ahead.
Free will is second to life itself as the largest gift that any human has ever been given. And we don't give enough credence to how much power we actually have to make choices every single day. I think there's a lot of pressure, and I think we need to simplify. And I think there is too much chaos. There's too much on the Instagram feed. There's too much. I think as much minimalism as we can do for our souls, for our minds, for our professions, the better. Because it's too much. It's a swirling disaster. People are going to feed us advice from every angle. But if we can simplify, like I said before, get silent. I think people's souls are far more wise than they actually give them credit.
I'm taking your advice right about now. That's well said. Communication. Because I think that's applicable here, because I don't think we really know how to communicate anymore. I really don't. And this is from somebody who was on his phone a lot because, you know, you text, you keep in touch with people. But I feel like the value of an in-person interaction is lost. That's why even for this very podcast, I have literally said, if I can't do this in person, it's not really worth it.
How did you learn that?
What's that?
How did you learn that, though? Like, you are half my age, maybe. folks, you can't see at home.
Oh my God, you can only hear,
but this low tenor of this female voice is not from, you know, smoking. This is age you're listening to.
To answer your question, I think all that time at my campus radio station, shout out to WRGW, and my sports department, I need y'all to pick it back up again. I think I learned that the communal experience is really very important,
mm-hmm.
you know, because over the phone, if I can be technical and producer-like for one second, number one, you have to wait for someone to totally hear your question, then kind of respond. If somebody wants to cut in, it doesn't really sound the best.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more importantly, you lose that communal feeling. Because phone calls really work if it's like the second or third time you're meeting somebody. The first time, it's kind of awkward.
Mm-hmm.
So this can be done in person, in somebody's office, or wherever. I don't mind going to where people are comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm just glad to be able to do something.
He is sitting 3 inches from a piano. The piano is like about to hit you in the face. I'm really sorry about that. It's pretty close. That's like 4 inches. You're fine. You're a musician. You're comfortable with this.
Oh, I'll play the maybe 6 chords I know.
That's right. I'd like him to. I mentioned it. I think you're recognizing that 90% of communication is nonverbal. So you can't read a person or how they're going to ask or answer a question. And I think, the same goes. So coaching, blah, blah, blah. What kind of relationships do you want with people? Like, I mean, and I know that most of my closest friends, a lot of them don't live in this state or even in this time zone. And so what do? Marco Polo, unfortunately, is like my favorite new app because it's not Snapchat. Mm-hmm. This is not even something I'm sharing with anyone else. It's just me and them, and we're looking at each other. And so I think, I just am curious how somebody who has been raised with all of this being normal, how are you going to say no to the things that are subpar? Like, this is one of the questions that people ask. Is it what's good, what's better, and what's best? And to me, relationships and conversation that are face-to-face are in fact best.
Absolutely.
So, but how does one learn that when they're not reared in the middle of it? Like, my friendships were not this way. Like, how do you keep friendships being... I'm sorry, this is not an interview of you, but I'm actually
here already. Here already. So the funny thing is, my friend, the people I was closest with, particularly in college, are all across the map.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they get up to see me. I'm definitely short one trip out west. I'm short one trip to Florida.
They know exactly who they are.
They know exactly who they are. And I'm sending them the link. I owe them one trip to California. No, I already said California. I'm in North Carolina. Goodness gracious.
A lot of places. He's got to go places.
I do. And hopefully not on my dime. If someone else is listening to this, you know what time it is. I'm going to send it to him too. I'm definitely going to send it to him.
Good.
But that the value of that nonverbal, that in-person communication, it really matters a lot.
Yeah.
So as someone who is really still trying to figure out what life looks like, because I feel like I can't be alone in this. There are people who have multiple things that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They've been told you have to focus on one to be truly great at it.
Yeah.
And I agree with it, but I almost feel like you can be great at multiple things at one time. It's a matter of how much time you're willing to put into it.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely true. At a certain point, I think the thing that you are most gifted towards and rewarded for is going to rise to the mm-hmm. top, and then it'll get your attention for a season, right? But this is not a one career world anymore. You got 2.0, you got 3.0. So you can kind of see where life is taking you. But I do want to say this, because you were talking about relationships and friendships, and I was just thinking, like, I think there's a lot of people out there who don't realize that, like, they're in a relationship that feels good, but it might not be going the way it should.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they feel uncomfortable. I think a lot of what life coaching is helping people set boundaries for themselves, because I know people, males and females, who are getting roughed up by relationships they're in every day, and they don't realize that the thing that makes them uncomfortable should be making them uncomfortable, and that they need to be able to say no. And it's not an inconvenience for the other people. It's a protection of themselves. And so, just hearing you say, like, I've got these friendships all over the place, and you know your true, like, serious lifelong friendships. But people are still trying to navigate how to build those. And I would just say, anytime someone is asking something of you that feels wrong, it's probably wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to say no to it. It's shocking in today's world. And that's just, again, that's just not something that I had to deal with. Like, it's something that you guys have to deal with. So.
That's really real.
I mean, it's sad.
It's sad, but it's real.
Yeah.
If there was a positive note for this, because this is
no, let's just end right now. This is perfect.
Oh, I don't think so. Jesus got up in a few days from now. That's absolutely
Amen
not
going to that.
Happen.
Thank you. That's right.
So if you could leave the people with a life coach-like benediction, what would you say?
I mean, it's hard not to give them the benediction of you are a, if you're a believer in the bigger things, that you are a chosen people, a holy priesthood, like that we are selling ourselves short on the daily, that there is so much more. And it's not about money. It's about what are you made to do? And what would bring you not success, but satisfaction? Those are totally different things. And no one else can determine that for you. And why are you giving someone else authorship over your life outside of God? Why are you giving culture or Instagram or anything else authorship of who you are? Like, I think what I would say is you're enough, and you're more than that. And if you were my client, I would be digging incredibly deep to see who are you and what makes you different than every other human I've ever met, which is so amazing because every human I've ever met is nothing like other people. And that sounds trite and cliche, but really, there is no other person. Every human is their own. It's like a snowflake. And so I would say on the positive, this is your one short, beautiful life, and it's yours. And God has given you free will to make a lot of choices, and there's a lot of power in that. So make some good choices. You've got plenty of time today. I can't promise you tomorrow, but yeah, it's good. I would just say, do it. There's nothing in your way. Do it.
Awesome. Awesome and awesome. Tell the people where they can catch up with you, reach out to you. If they heard this and say, help me, please, how do they reach you?
Well, I feel like that's self-promoting. And that doesn't work for me because I'm not striving here.
Well, I understand that.
Maybe I don't have any room in my...
But this is a this is a request from me.
All right. So my name is Amy Tejan. You'll never be able to spell it, and that's fine. But my company...
It'll be in the bio.
My company is Metamorphosis. Metamorphosis LLC. So, yeah.
Website?
Metamorphosis. lifecoaching.net.
Thank you. So do you do social media? Because I actually managed to avoid intertwining my worlds. So do you have a professional social
no,
media?
No, I refuse.
Yay. So just find the website.
Yeah, it's not, it's one of those things, y'all. Like, if it's meant to be, it'll be. I'm already pretty busy. So, but that doesn't mean I don't have space for you. What it means is if it's meant to be, it'll be.
Wow, that's the kindest way she might have just told somebody, don't bother. But it's okay.
Hey, no, it's on you. If you're ready, I'm ready. But if you're not, you're not. And then go have some time alone, like I said.
See? There you go. So you're welcome for all of this, even though you haven't thanked anybody yet. I, however, will self-promote. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I changed the name. They're both N_ASONYE. I will not give you my Facebook, even if you try to find me. I probably won't accept unless I know you. Or you can send me a message and say, oh my gosh, I really love the show. I've never gotten one of those. So that's okay
with me. I'll send you one later. I'll coach you on that. Well done. Cheerleading. Wee, Inqua.
Unbelievable. Well, thank you for joining us. For those who celebrate, happy Passover. Mm-hmm. Happy Easter. Happy, I can't say everything because that would be
spring.
Wild. Happy spring. There we go. We can go with that.
New season.
New season. Same season for the show. Next episode in a couple of weeks. You can check this out on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. We will get that fixed, and Anchor. Until next time. See ya.